Out front next, breaking news, President Trump about to headline an event in South Dakota where there will be no social distancing and masks are optional. Why put people's health in jeopardy? Plus Florida and Texas, two states where cases of coronavirus are surging. Patients filling up hospitals, just how bad is it? I'll speak to experts in both states. And one man gets coronavirus after visiting friends. Weeks later, he writes that he hopes he'll be able to survive it, but he did not. His niece with a warning tonight. Let's go out front. Good evening, everyone. I'm Kate Baldwin, in for Aaron Burnett. Welcome to a special edition of Out Front. And tonight, the president's disregard for public health. I don't say that lightly. But how else can you view it when experts say don't attend large gatherings and he's effectively hosting one tonight? Take a look at the scene at Mount Rushmore this evening. The president is on his way there to South Dakota right now, where he'll give a speech and watch fireworks with a crowd that's expected to be up to 7,500 people. Masks are optional. Social distancing, there's no plan for it, as you can see. The president intentionally flouting his experts' own guidelines that face coverings are and avoiding large gatherings is absolutely necessary at this point to stop the spread of coronavirus at a time when infection rates are at an all-time high. 36 states, including South Dakota, are seeing an increase in infections. Alabama and North Carolina reporting a record number of cases just today. In California, hospitalization rates are at an all-time high. And in Arizona, the demand for ICU beds is hitting a new level. And when the president's own infectious disease expert was asked about events just like tonight's at Mount Rushmore, here's what Dr. Anthony Fauci said.
You should avoid, whenever possible, gathering in crowds where people cannot maintain physical distance. If, in fact, the circumstances are such that that's going to happen anyway, no matter what anybody says, you should wear a mask at all times.
That's clearly not happening tonight, which can only lead one to ask, is the president putting the public at risk so he can put on a spectacle packed with a crowd? Because you know he's been advised against this, but still.
I'm going to Mount Rushmore on July 3rd. We're going to have a tremendous evening. It's going to be a fireworks display like few people have seen. And then we're coming back here celebrating the 4th of July in Washington, D.C.
D.C.'s mayor is actually urging residents not to go to the National Mall tomorrow for that, warning that it's just not safe at this point in the pandemic. So this isn't even do as I say, not as I do territory anymore with the president and the White House's response to this very real public health crisis. It is, if you're trusting the science, which you should, it is now don't do as he says and don't do what he's doing. Joe Johns is out front live at Mount Rushmore, where the president will be arriving shortly. Joe, what are you hearing and seeing there on the ground?
Well, Kate, 3 points. First is crowd size. Always tends to be an issue as the president tries to restart the country and flies around to these big events. If you look down at the lower level here in the amphitheater at Rushmore, it's pretty much filled up. We've been watching it all day long, and the entire amphitheater is not filled up yet, but it looks like that could happen. As you said, they're looking for 7,500 people. The second point is important. We have not seen a lot of face coverings on the people coming in here. We've been watching it all day long. We know that face coverings are optional. We also know that the government has said they will provide face coverings for people if they come in here and don't have them. It doesn't look like a lot of people have been asking for that. And the third issue is distancing. Now, we were told by the governor of this state, South Dakota, that there would be no distancing at this event. What we did not know is that there would be people who could not distance. That is because there are these black folding chairs filling out some of the seating in the amphitheater, and they are linked together with black zip ties. And you ask, Why on earth would you create a situation like that where the person sitting in one seat has an up-close personal experience with the person sitting in another seat in the age of coronavirus? The answer is there is a code. There is a fire code that says these seats have to be linked in case there is a storm or a fire. And if there is a storm and a fire and they're not linked, those chairs could block the exits and make it hard for people to get out. The last thing, the last point is, fire is a real issue here. When it gets dark, there are going to be fireworks, and there have been forest fires here before. So concerns about that, the authorities want to keep everybody safe. Okay, back to you.
Joe, thank you. More breaking news tonight. At least 8 Secret Service agents stuck in Arizona after getting coronavirus while preparing for a visit by Vice President Mike Pence. Pamela Brown is out front right now. Pamela, this is also causing concern, understandably, among agents at tonight's rally in South Dakota.
That's right. Kate, agents have been there on the ground in South Dakota for several days preparing for the president's trip there. And they're also preparing for what appears to be the inevitability here of at least one or more agents contracting the coronavirus. When you look at what's happened thus far in the Secret Service, we have just learned today that at least 8 Secret Service agents are now in quarantine at a hotel in Phoenix. They tested positive for coronavirus before Vice President Pence's trip there, and they are experiencing flu-like symptoms, a source tells my colleague Jamie Gangel. So you have that. In addition to upwards of 15 agents, Kate, who tested positive for coronavirus after the president's Tulsa, Oklahoma rally, as you'll recall, just about 2 weeks ago. So there are a couple dozen Secret Service agents, Kate, who have already tested positive that we know of. Those are the ones that we know. Right. And one source within the agency spoke to Jamie Gangel and said that there is a sense of frustration among some agents that this is an unnecessary risk going on these trips for the president campaign rally, for what some sources say is just meant to boost the president's mood. They think that it's really an unnecessary risk for exposure and just not worth it. Now, we should note, though, the Secret Service gives masks, has given protective gear to all of the agents. A White House spokesman said that the president takes the health and safety of those traveling for him seriously. And the Secret Service says the health and safety of the agents, of their families, and of the protectees are of utmost importance. Kate?
Pamela, great reporting. Thank you. And welcome back. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Out front with me right now, Dr. Jonathan Reiner. He was a White House medical advisor under President George W. Bush. And Dr. William Schaffner. He's a professor of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Vanderbilt University Medical Center and a former CDC official. It's great to see both of you. Dr. Reiner, you told me last night President Trump was clearly flirting with disaster by continuing to hold large events like this, especially when he and others, well, one, are not wearing masks. And then you just hear Pamela Brown's reporting. It's about Secret Service agents. But it's not just Secret Service agents, which is important to talk about because they're on their job. But also look at these crowd shots. People very close together, many not wearing masks. Yeah. What is at stake here tonight?
Well, the health of the public. Which apparently is not much of a concern for the president and his team. Kate, would you have a get-together in your home if you knew that at least some of the people coming to your home would get sick or maybe die because they're coming to your home? Or that others who came,
right.
Or that others who came to your house would get so drunk that they would get into accidents and hurt people who weren't even in your house. That's what happens when you have a mass gathering during a pandemic. And that is what all of these events that the president goes to, where they promote these large numbers of attendees, that's what this does. It's a danger to the people that support him, and it's a danger to his staff. On the rock behind him, on the mountain behind him, is Thomas Jefferson. And Jefferson said, we act not for ourselves, but for all humankind. What we're seeing here from the President of the United States is a selfish act, an act of self-promotion, which puts the health of his staff members and the people who support him at risk. It's really unjustifiable.
Dr. Schaffner, the Attorney General of South Dakota, he today downplayed the concerns surrounding holding this event. Let me play this.
I think that we have done a number of things to mitigate the spread of the COVID. As you probably know, our state has not mandated these various policies that other states have, and I think we're very proud of that, and our numbers have remained low.
He says they've done things to mitigate the spread of COVID, but how does not requiring masks and having no social distancing plan help mitigate the spread of COVID?
Kate, that won't work. Let's look at it. Large gathering, very few people wearing masks, no social distancing. This is not a political statement. Three strikes and you're out. To mix metaphors, this professor will mark that answer on the quiz incorrect. For sure, just statistically, COVID will attend this event tonight. It's a stealth virus. It will be there. There will be some spread, and those people will take it home to others and accelerate the spread further. This is a most unwise thing to do.
That's truly unsettling, but I think that's an important way of putting it. Statistically, coronavirus is going to attend tonight. People need to think of it that way. That is really scary, and that's not a guess. That's data, statistics, science, as both of you know very well. Speaking of, Dr. Reiner, let me play for you how the Surgeon General of the United States answered a simple question about this event, one that Dr. Schaffner just answered very clearly. Would you advise someone to attend a large gathering? Yes or no, he was asked. Listen.
It's not a yes or no. Every single person has to make up their own mind. There are going to be people going to beaches, going to barbecues, going to different environments, and they have to look at their individual risk. As you mentioned, CDC says larger gatherings are a higher risk. You have to take that into account.
Dr. Reiner, is it about individual risk assessment anymore with this virus? Is the Surgeon General doing anything to other than creating more confusion?
All right, so let me answer that question. If the question is, should anyone in this country be attending a mass gathering? The answer is simple, no, period. Look, this Surgeon General has gotten some very big things very wrong. On February 29th, he tweeted, seriously, people, stop buying masks. Masks will not prevent you from getting this virus. How do you get something that big, that wrong, and still hold your job? Look, when I listen to the voices of the task force, I'm listening for people who are telling me it straight up. And I listen to Tony Fauci, who tells it to us straight up, which is maybe why the White House prevents him from speaking to the press and speaking to the country. But when I hear the Surgeon General of the United States not able to answer that question, I give him no credibility. He has no credibility in my mind. To use a metaphor that the president would understand, that question was a 2-inch putt. That was a gimme. And the Surgeon General whiffed on it.
Dr. Schaffner, final word on, I don't know. I'm at a bit of a loss about this event tonight. It seems a no-brainer of how you can protect the public when that's your job. And that's not what's happening from the president, from the governor, on down here.
Yes, it's very sad. And remember, it's not a matter of individual decision making. You put other people at risk. Remember, this is a contagious virus, so your decisions affect others. And that's why we all have to work together to reduce the spread of this virus, and we all have to get with the program.
Hopefully, those not there can learn a lesson from watching this tonight, I guess. Thank you both. Out front next, Florida, now averaging more new cases per day than any other state. Some hospitals admitting a record number of patients. Do health experts expect this trend to turn around anytime soon? Plus, a man who admits that, in his own words, stupidity led to his coronavirus infection, and he died shortly thereafter. His niece has something to say to those wanting to celebrate the 4th of July with others tonight. And the heartbreaking physical and emotional toll that coronavirus is taking on children. Tonight, crowds growing at some Florida beaches, despite the state now reporting the highest average of new cases per day in the United States. This comes as health officials across the country grow more concerned about a busy 4th of July weekend. Jason Carroll is out front.
Firework shows, parades, and beach barbecues canceled from coast to coast over concerns the holiday weekend could fuel a surge in new coronavirus cases. Florida now leads the nation in the average number of new reported COVID-19 cases per day. The state announced 9,488 new cases Friday.
The numbers are going up in the hospital. The ICU beds are filling up, and it's requiring a lot of work and a lot of effort to move patients around to make a spot for the new patients, whether they're COVID or not COVID.
The state's youngest victim, an 11-year-old boy from Miami-Dade County, who died from COVID-19 complications. Tonight, a 10 p.m. curfew goes into effect countywide to discourage holiday goers from heading out.
There's nothing more American than making a sacrifice by staying home to keep a family member safe, a neighbor safe, or a stranger safe.
By early Friday, crowds had already started gathering on Florida's Gulf Coast on this beach in Clearwater. Health officials seeing record hospitalizations in California, where singing and chanting in that state is now banned at houses of worship. The concerns that the virus will be transmitted through infected exhale droplets. While in Texas, masks are mandated in more than two-thirds of the counties in the state, the governor, who critics say was slow to make the move, now says,
If people gather on 4th of July, the same way they did in Memorial Day, it is going to lead to a massive increase in the number of people testing positive, the number of people who will be hospitalized, and it could lead once again to an increase in the number of people who lose their lives.
Despite having once downplayed the importance of wearing a mask, the country's Surgeon General says it is imperative.
If you want college football in the fall, young people, please wear a face covering. If you want prom next year, please wear a face covering. It can prevent asymptomatic spread and help us overcome this virus.
So, Kate, as you heard there, after the Memorial Day weekend, health officials saw a huge spike in COVID cases. They're hoping that people have learned their lessons. I mean, since then, there have been a number of closures, a number of restrictions in states across the country. But ultimately, health officials say what this is going to come down to is whether or not people heed the advice of health officials and practice social distancing and wear a mask. We'll see what happens after this holiday. Kate.
Yeah, good to see you. Thank you. As you just heard in Jason's piece, the two hot spots in the United States right now are Texas and Florida. I want to go now to experts in both of those states. Dr. Philip Kaiser, the local health authority in Galveston County, Texas, and Dr. James Fiorica. He's chief medical officer at Sarasota Memorial Hospital in Florida. Thank you for being here. Dr. Kaiser, Texas reporting a third straight day with more than 7,000 new cases, and your county is seeing a big upward trend of infections. We're showing a graph right now for people to see. How concerned are you by the situation that's playing out right now in your county?
Oh, I'm very worried. I'll be very honest about that. We've seen the numbers of cases simply go up, up, and up. You know, 2 weeks ago, we broke 100 new cases for the first time. Now we're getting over 200 cases a day on a daily basis. On a per capita basis, we actually have more cases than they do in Harris County, which is our neighbor to the north where Houston is, or Dallas, or Austin, or San Antonio. With that, we're also seeing an increased rate of hospitalizations. We now have over 100 people in hospital beds. Fortunately, the ICUs have not filled up yet, but we have started to see an increase in deaths. We reported 5 deaths so far this week.
Oh. And Dr. Fiorica, in Florida, it now is averaging more new cases per day than any other state. Your hospital admitted a record number of patients with coronavirus just today. Do you anticipate that trend turning around anytime soon?
No, we don't. We definitely have concerns. Right now, we have 62 COVID patients in the hospital, and I heard we have 4 more on their way by EMS to come in just today. That will probably be there at the end of this show. We've gone from 6 patients COVID positive at the beginning of June to 62 today. So just in 30 days, you can see that climb.
You really can. And it is scary what that means if things don't turn around, what that climb will mean given another couple weeks. We saw Dr. Kaiser with Memorial Day. Mark it, and you see essentially 2 weeks later the spike beginning, and then the hospitalizations come after that and the deaths after that. So mark tomorrow on your calendar. 2 weeks from now, what do you fear it's going to look like?
Oh, I think it's going to be worse. And I think everyone in our county and in our hospital systems are resigned to that fact. You know, we've been following this since April, and it's very clear that there's at least a 2 to 4 week lag between what we're seeing in terms of cases and people that are hospitalized and in the ICU and dying. So, you know, we expect the hospitalization numbers to continue to rise. I would not be surprised if we didn't have more deaths in the next couple of weeks. What really concerns us is will this reset that we're having in the state and locally make a difference? Because we really do need that desperately. We need people to be staying home. We need people when they're out and about wearing masks. We need people to be socially distancing. And we need people who just have a sense of that this doesn't apply to them or they don't care. They need to start paying attention. This isn't about having a problem. This isn't about having football. This is about grandma dying or your mother or father dying. And we want to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, and it's much more immediate than football and prom, to be quite honest. Dr. Fiorica, you're seeing more and more young people coming in with COVID. We're hearing that same thing from really across the country. Short of locking people in their homes, what do you think is actually going to get through to people to help keep them out of your hospital?
You know, we need to do everything we can to encourage people to distance themselves and to wear masks. I mean, if you look at the younger patients, I mean, our average age in June was 49 years old for our COVID positive patients. In March and April, that average age was over 70 years old. So you can see the trend. So we're getting the older patients, but we're also getting the younger patients. So we're getting everybody, but the big difference is really distancing and masks. We really need to encourage everyone to take this seriously. It really is an important healthcare issue that I'm not sure that everyone understands the full extent of it.
I don't know how they at least don't understand the ways to best mitigate it right now, because it's been repeated over and over again by experts like yourselves. Thank you both very much. Out front next, Americans traveling overseas forced to turn around after being denied entry, and it's all because of the rising cases here in the United States. Plus, he attended a gathering, a get-together with friends, and he got sick. Later, writing on Facebook how he regretted going. Within days, he tragically died. His niece is our guest. Tonight, hopefully with God's help, I'll be able to survive this. Those words turned out to be a final message from a California man after getting coronavirus. His name is Tommy Macias. His family says that he had been vigilant, but when his county started to reopen, he decided to go to a party hosted by friends. And then he found out he was sick. And then he posted this on Facebook. I went out a couple of weeks ago because of my stupidity. I put my mom and my sisters and my family's health in jeopardy. This is no joke. If you have to go out, wear a mask and practice social distancing. Hopefully, with God's help, I'll be able to survive this. The next day, he rushed to the hospital and he died. He was 51 years old. Out front now, Danielle Lopez, the niece of Tommy Macias. Danielle, I'm so sorry for your loss. How are you doing? How's your mom, Tommy's sister, and their mom, your grandmother?
We're all still really just trying to process everything. We're just trying to take it day by day right now.
Because, like so many others, you really weren't even able to say goodbye.
No, we weren't. We couldn't see him, we couldn't speak with him, and then everything happened so quickly, and he was starting to get better prior to Sunday that it all just happened so fast, and it was just a complete shock to all of us.
Can you tell me more about how this happened?
We attended that party at the beginning of June. And there was a person there who had the virus and passed it on to my uncle. And then he found out about a week or two later, that person called and let him know that he was positive. And at that point, my uncle had already been feeling ill. So he decided to go get tested. He received the results on Thursday. And then he passed away on Sunday.
I mean, that's unbelievable how fast that happened. When you found out that he had gotten that positive test result back, what did you think?
Initially, I was very upset with the person who was there, with my uncle, because prior to knowing that he was positive himself, he went to my parents' house where my grandmother and my mother both were. Mm-hmm. Luckily, they had kept their distance from him. I'm sorry, I'm still just trying to even process that all of this is happening. It just all feels so surreal.
It has to. It must. This isn't supposed to happen. This isn't, as you've told my producers, Tommy wasn't mm-hmm. reckless about this. He had been vigilant. And then
yes.
That's why it is so striking, Danielle, when he, reading his words and his feelings about getting the virus, and you could really sense his disappointment in himself.
Yes, he was very hard on himself about it, because he got it himself, but mostly what he was concerned about was passing it on to mainly my grandmother and my mother, but any of us in our family. He was so concerned that he could have potentially infected one of us.
Is that in line with what you know about your Uncle Tommy and how he would be?
Absolutely. Family meant everything to him. He put family above anything else.
I mean, I'm sure you followed this pandemic closely, and you've heard mm-hmm. and read some of the stories of people losing loved ones to the virus. I mean, did you ever think, Danielle, that you would be in this position on TV talking about this happening to you?
No, I never would have imagined that this would have happened to my family, and it never. I mean, we were taking precautions, all of us, and him, us here in my home, all of us were being so careful. I can't believe that any of this is happening.
His funeral service is scheduled for next week. I really would like to know I would like to know a lot of so much more. What you want people to remember about your uncle, and also what your message is tonight to those who are still resistant to doing what your uncle wrote in that Facebook post, to wearing a face covering, and what lesson you want people to take from this?
For my uncle, out of everything, I want everybody to remember how loving and caring he was, how deeply he cared for every single person, family and friends. And that's what I would like also for everybody to take away from it. If everybody could have just a little bit more caring for all their other people, just to wear a mask. This is so easily preventable if everybody just plays their part.
Yeah. I'm just so struck by his sweet smile in those pictures that we're seeing with him with your family. And I see it on your face too, Danielle. Thank you for your strength. Thank you for being here. Bless you. And I'm so sorry again.
Thank you.
Too many of these stories, people. Too many. Out front for us next, a warning for children as coronavirus accelerates and escalates. A top official and pediatrician in California is sounding the alarm. And a Republican congresswoman takes on Trump, calling him out on a number of issues. So why hasn't the president hit back? Tonight, California reporting troubling new signs, a new record high of people sick enough with COVID that they need to be hospitalized. More than 5,500 patients admitted. Aaron spoke to the Surgeon General of California, Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris, earlier about what needs to be done to stop the surge and also how the pandemic will impact children long after it's over.
Dr. Burke-Harris, I appreciate your time. You know, coronavirus cases in California and many places in this country are surging. Mayor of Los Angeles says the next 2 weeks are critical. We also saw Dr. Fauci saying cases in the United States could be doubling. I mean, how crucial is this moment?
It's absolutely critical. What we know is that our behavior is the most powerful tool we have right now against the virus. And we really need folks to step up. I know that folks are tired, but it's absolutely critically important.
So you are a pediatrician also, and one of the areas I know that you focus on is childhood trauma and how it affects long-term health. Obviously, this pandemic has been hugely disruptive to children's lives around the world and around this country. What are the long-term effects on children that you are most worried about?
Well, I mean, what we know is that many kids are missing out on their normal developmental interactions, the interactions they have at school. And school isn't just a place where kids receive knowledge and learn about the three R's. It's also a place where they have contact with safe, stable, and nurturing adults. And we know that for many families, the hardships that they're experiencing right now, both economic in terms of isolation and the stress of the pandemic, can not only impact our mood, our behavior, and our mental health, but also that stress can actually affect our physical health, increasing risk for chronic disease.
So, you know, we've actually seen a decline in child abuse calls, and obviously we understand this not to be at all because fewer kids are being the victims of abuse. It's actually because of exactly what you just said. The kids aren't interacting with adults who would see signs of abuse, who would be able to intervene, to report this. Teachers, daycare workers, people in those roles of authority, you know. This is a pretty scary thing to imagine that this is going on now behind closed doors, maybe even at an elevated level, and we're hearing less about it. I mean, how worried are you?
I'll tell you, this is probably the biggest thing that keeps me up at night. The fact that kids who are at risk are not coming into contact with the safe adults who could offer help and support. And that's why it's really important for us to continue to check in on our friends, our family members, whether it's a member of our church, if you're an educator, checking in on your students, you know, seeing how they're doing. Staying in touch and maintaining our social connections is absolutely critical during this time.
So according to the American Public Media Research Lab, Black Americans are 12% of the U.S. population, just over, but have suffered nearly a quarter of known coronavirus deaths. And I want to emphasize the word known coronavirus deaths, 24%. So you recently wrote an essay and you were talking about racism and how it has contributed to a disparity in health between Black Americans and white Americans. And I just wanted to quote part of what you said, Dr. Burke-Harris. You said, the images of protesters wearing face masks in the streets, carrying signs that say Black Lives Matter, provide a stark juxtaposition. They contrast the heroic efforts we are all making to protect our communities from coronavirus against our feckless efforts to curb the sickness of racism that has infected America since its birth. In those images is also a reminder that the disproportionate death rate of Black and brown people from COVID-19 is no coincidence. It is directly related to the history of racial oppression in our nation. Those are powerful words. And now that you see this playing out, do you have confidence that this moment will be a moment that causes that to change or not?
I certainly have a lot of hope. And honestly, it's a big part of the reason why I get out of bed every day, because this is a time for change. When I say that it's no coincidence, what I'm referring to is the fact that the science shows that experiences of trauma and adversity, the day-to-day experiences of racist injustice that Black Americans experience every day, has a direct biological effect on our bodies. It affects your immune system. It affects your cardiovascular system. It affects the brain development and hormonal systems in a biological process that is now known as the toxic stress response. That is over and above what we already recognize in terms of the impacts of structural inequities that came about as the result of 20 generations of racist policy. And so when we see that that is literally leading to the deaths of Black and brown Americans, I personally am outraged. I think we all should be outraged. And it's time for us to to make really concrete efforts, right? So really direct and significant efforts to change the structural inequities, but also to combat and dismantle racist policies and practices that have been part of American culture for far too long.
All right, well, I really appreciate your time. Dr. Boris-Harris, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to join you today.
Up front for us next, a prominent Republican taking President Trump to task and doing so publicly. Why hasn't Trump retaliated? And not allowed in, Americans denied entry to Italy because of coronavirus infections in the U.S. Tonight, it's rare for Republicans on Capitol Hill to speak out against President Trump, but one notable member of the president's party isn't keeping quiet. Sunland Sarfati is out front.
Representative Liz Cheney. Thanks, Liz.
With her own style, Congresswoman Liz Cheney.
I believe that the American people deserve to know what agreement has been entered into in our name.
Is becoming more outspoken and emboldened, splitting with and speaking out against President Trump on a series of issues, a rare move by a senior member of the Republican leadership. Just look at her Twitter feed. This week, she demanded to know why the president didn't know about reports about potential Russian bounties on U.S. troops. Last week, this provocative tweet featured her father. She didn't mention Trump by name, but didn't need to. Real men wear masks, she wrote, indirectly hitting Trump, who had at that point been unwilling to endorse wearing a mask. In tweet after tweet, Cheney has used the president's favorite forum to push back on him, calling Trump's plans to remove U.S. troops from Germany dangerously misguided, shooting down Trump's idea to have Taliban leaders at Camp David for peace talks, saying no member of the Taliban should set foot there ever. When Trump claimed he had total authority to lift restrictions governors had imposed on their states during the coronavirus lockdown.
When somebody's the president of the United States, the authority is total, and that's the way it's got to be.
Cheney rebutted when Trump called for the economy to reopen.
I would love to have the country opened up and just raring to go by Easter.
She came out against it, saying there will be no normally functioning economy if hospitals are overwhelmed and thousands die. When Trump was attacking witnesses who testified in his impeachment hearing, she defended them.
I think that we need to show that we are better than that as a nation.
Sometimes she's even gone out of her way to distance herself from Trump's rhetoric.
Madam Speaker,
on Capitol Hill last month, without even being asked, she chastised Trump's unsubstantiated claims, suggesting that former Congressman Joe Scarborough murdered a former congressional aide. I do think the president should stop tweeting about Joe Scarborough. We're in the middle of a pandemic, she said. He's the commander-in-chief of this nation. But unlike other Republicans who have spoken out against Trump.
But you know, the Republicans stuck together, except Romney, of course. You know, right? Low life. Low life.
Cheney so far has been immune to a counterpunch from President Trump.
Well, one of the great ones, one of our really good friends. Lynn, go ahead, please.
Thank you very much, Ms. President. I appreciate that.
Many Republicans on Capitol Hill believe this is largely because of her name recognition. She is an outsized independence based on national support.
We are absolutely unified as a conference, unified behind the president.
And that despite her ramped up rhetoric, she's still there when the president needs her.
We know we're going to get the president reelected.
And Republican sources tell me they believe that this is her play to carve out a new lane for herself, to position herself well in case President Trump does not win reelection, to potentially rise to House Minority Leader or potentially even Speaker of the House. Kate?
Sunland, thank you. Out front next, Italy refuses entry to a group of Americans because of the coronavirus crisis here at home. Americans denied entry to Italy, even after they landed on Italian soil. And as Scott McLean reports, that's not the only problem for American travelers right now.
Kate, travelers from 59 countries will soon be allowed to come to England without the mandatory two-week quarantine requirement that is currently in place. The list includes countries like Spain, Italy, and France, all of which were once coronavirus hot zones. Noticeably absent, the United States. The British Transport Secretary pointed out that the U.S. was quick to bar U.K. travelers from entering early on in the pandemic. And of course, the U.K. has a sky-high infection rate that is showing no signs of slowing down. Now, that news comes as a private jet carrying five Americans was turned away after landing in Italy. The jet flew directly from Colorado to the Mediterranean island of Sardinia. Now, Italian authorities said that they tried to, quote, find a solution for the American travelers, but there was no way around the new EU rules, which allow travelers from more than a dozen countries, but not the U.S. That plane instead departed for the U.K., where, of course, everyone on board will have to quarantine for 2 weeks. Kate?
Scott, thank you so much. And thank you so much for joining us, guys. AC360 starts now.